God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
He didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. And because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. We'll get to the news, including a number that you've probably not heard, and that is the total amount of money government schools across America have spent fighting against parents, with the hope of being able to trans your kids and to teach them to like pornography and to like sex with all comers. I'll tell you about that number as we continue on. I do want to keep the promise I made, though, in regard to the Thanksgiving season, and to tell you a story that happened to us as a family and was later repeated to me. It happened to me in a different form as a young man leading a team of people starting a business. My mom, against her will, became a single parent. And I've mentioned on the program, if you're new to the program, welcome. We appreciate you being here. I've mentioned the mistake my dad made, who extended it into a lifelong mistake, of leaving my mom after an act of adultery, which should have ended there, but he got married. The one blessing we got out of it is profound. I have a half-brother who is an enormously good man. I'm thrilled to have him in the family. Love him very dearly. That was the one blessing. Many, many curses came from that. And when he made that decision, my mom was left for a period of time being the sole provider, albeit with help from grandma and grandpa. And I told the story the other day about grandpa thinking he was being clever, leaving us groceries on the front porch, when in fact he was the only family member who shopped at a place called Rosar's. So I knew it was from grandpa, but mom chasing me. You will never admit that you knew your grandfather did these things. So my mom was a school teacher, a blonde-haired lady. She lost a bunch of weight after she got divorced, and she'd been through an attempt at suicide. She didn't perform the attempt in front of us. But when my dad had left, a couple weeks after he'd left, she got very drunk. She drank a bunch of wine. It was incredibly scary. And I didn't know this, but she had taken some pills. I knew something was wrong with mom. And I remember to this day, she was making spaghetti. I remember the dish she was making. She always served corn with spaghetti. And she was making spaghetti. And she said, maybe I should put some garden dirt in the spaghetti, and laughed. And I thought, this is bizarre behavior from my mom. And I don't know if it was God who spoke through me or just fear, but I took my little sister and left, and I was in first grade. I took my little sister by the hand and we left. We walked up the street and we went to some friend's house. Their father was a firefighter, EMT, Scott's parents. And I told him what was going on, and he knew something was wrong with my mom. And they took her to the hospital. Called my dad, and he came out and talked to us, and mom never tried that again. Was deeply ashamed of it, and talked to us about what she had done and why it was a mistake. But this was a little bit of background. Now, I think it was probably about 8 years later, maybe longer, that we were going into the Christmas season. One income, dad was in this period of time where he was very resentful of the parenting agreement and the passive-aggressive decision to not pay child support and to not work. My dad was a dear man. He was a good man. He spent his life rescuing kids as a social worker. And he was an obstinate man and sometimes a deeply, deeply depressed man who hated himself. So his response to being rejected in the workplace was to not work. Very mature. So he did this for a little while. It cost us a lot. And it cost my dad. It cost my dad his self-esteem for a long time. So it was during this phase that my mom went in to do laundry. And in the house we lived in, the laundry room was this very long, but very very shallow room. And it had in it a big old-fashioned washer and dryer, which, by the way, are better than the new ones. Can we admit this? Do you guys have those washers and dryers where the dryer pretends to know when clothes are dry and has no idea if they're dry? Or this, the washer just can't seem to bounce alone. I don't know what it was, the 1960s and 70s washers. They'd shake around, but eventually the clothes would become balanced in any case. So we had this room, and it was filled with my mom's Dittos. Do you remember Dittos when we were in school? Do you remember those things? That they were the copies that teachers made on their own. My mom would make her own Dittos at home. So it smelled like that solution. Smelled a little bit like cat litter and laundry. And toys. A lot of toys in there. My mom went in to do laundry during the winter, and the dryer wouldn't work. She was working a couple of jobs in addition to teaching. My dad was not paying child support. The dryer had worked, but now it didn't. It was too cold to hang the clothes outside, because that's what she did during the spring and summer. To save money, she hung the clothes outside. And to this day, do you remember what that smelled like? To dry your clothes, hanging them on a line. Not if you live in an area with a lot of smog, but we lived in an area without smog. Do you remember the smell of that? It's very much like actual iced tea made in the real sun. It can't be replicated, but it was too cold. So here's my mom, all of, I think, probably 29 years old, 30 maybe. And she has no way to do laundry. So she unplugged the dryer. She took all the clothes out. She looked around and couldn't figure out what's going on. So she called my uncle. My uncle was my father's brother. He was a police officer by background, National Guardsman, terrific man. You know, he was the trickster of the family. I should say there was a time where I did not like my uncle because of the tricks he used to play on me when I was a little. But I love him dearly now and miss him. Don't see him enough. That's my decision, I guess. So Larry came down, drove down from his mountain home, came in, and he took the dryer apart. He looked at all the fuses, looked at all the connections, and he couldn't find a thing wrong with the dryer. It should be working, but it wasn't. He apologized to my mom. He said, hey, you know, let me buy you a new dryer. My mom said, absolutely not. No. He was my dad's brother. He was embarrassed for my dad for not providing. But she said, no, you have a family to raise. So he reluctantly said, you might have to call a repairman. They were Sears washers and dryers. Remember that, when Sears was everything? So my mom had to sit down and do math. If I have a repairman out, that means I take gifts back. Now, see, she was in this competition she shouldn't have been in, because my dad's new wife, a woman who was deeply troubled, deeply, deeply troubled, she had access to a bunch of money through her family. There would be plenty of gifts. My mom was subconsciously aware of this. She wanted us to experience a great Christmas with her. She never made Christmas about gifts, despite the fact that she's a lapsed, heretical Catholic. She wanted us to know the story of Jesus, the facts of Jesus. So we had the nativity scene, and she talked to us about this and what Jesus means and meant through her broken lens of lapsed Catholicism. And so she was aware of this kind of latent competition or unspoken competition. She knew we would go to Grandma and Grandpa's house. She knew there'd be gifts there. She knew we would go to my dad's new wife's parents' house. Her mother was still living and would shower us with gifts. And yet she did the math. It's a repairman, and these gifts go back. So she took an accounting of the gifts that would pay for the repairman, and she called a repairman to come. And he drove out to the house. And that dryer that wouldn't work in that small room, now put back together, because my uncle was a responsible man who put it back together, the repairman came, and he too took it apart. And he stayed in that room looking at everything. And he came out with the dryer put back together. And he said, ma'am, that dryer should work. For the life of me, I can't figure out why it's not working. He even went outside in the garage and checked our connections there. He went downstairs and turned the fuses off and on. He looked at everything. So my mom got out her checkbook. He said, no, absolutely not. There's no way I'm going to let you pay me for this. I found nothing wrong with this. And she said, but you work for Sears. He said, it's on me. They'll be okay. I'm not going to charge you. I'll say it's a warranty thing. So he left. And the laundry is still there. Now, she didn't have to replace the gifts, but now we're looking at a new dryer. So now it's more gifts that will need to be taken away. All of them. All of them. So she started to think about, well, handmade gifts. I'll make handmade gifts for the kids. Handmade gifts are great gifts. I'll knit a blanket. I'll knit sweaters. And then she thought of the time. It's just about Thanksgiving. I have time for this. Secondhand stores weren't a big deal then, and they didn't have nice things. So Christmas with no gifts. My mom went into that little laundry room, and she cried. She tells the story to this day that she wept. It's been 8 years since my husband left. He's not paying child support. It's been 8 years since I've had a relationship like this that's marital. My kids are about to have a Christmas with no gifts. I'm working three jobs. Lord, I can't handle this. I can't do this. You have to help me. You have to help me. For whatever reason, like a gambler walking out of a casino, going to a slot machine, she went to the dryer. And she tried it one more time. And it worked. God, my mom says, is in the dryer. It worked. She was able to dry clothes then, and that dryer lasted another 5 or 6 years. And every time she went into that room, she would remember that God is in the dryer. And she passed this on to us. Sometimes God is in the dryer. Speaking to the boys the other night, I am honored to help co-lead groups of young men. I was responding to what's called 3 minutes of fire. This is where a student takes the stage during our large group and shares their witness or a testimony. Sometimes it's a mini sermon. And a young woman had talked about that during the winter, the winter seasons, the dark seasons, sometimes it seems like the fruit is not growing and yet the Lord is working. The Lord is prepping the branches, the roots, to prepare fruit that we'll only observe in the spring and the summer and ultimately harvest and eat or give to friends. But it's during that process. If you'd never seen a fruit tree before, during the winter, you'd walk by it, look at that horrible tree, that collection of sticks, good for nothing. And yet below it, God is prepping the roots and the branches to produce fruit. And in that case, God is in the winter. God is in the valleys, just as he's in the hills. But as someone who is right now going through a dark season, I can tell you, it's sometimes difficult to know that God is in the dryer. To remember that God is working, that the fruits are being made. And that maybe what's happened is God has said, hey, I needed to prune some things. You weren't doing it, so I did it. You were going to use a nail clipper. I gave you the opportunity to use a nail clipper. You refused. So I just took the tree down. But now there's a new orchard. We'll get into the news, this number, how much the government spent fighting against parents, government schools. It's more than you think. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Thanks for listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Some breaking news. Thank you to Adam who's filling in for Randy today for getting that ear on this. This comes from thehill.com. The Israeli government's expected to shortly announce its agreement to a ceasefire with Hezbollah in Lebanon that will begin Wednesday morning, according to a source familiar. The announcement's expected following a vote taking place among Israel's security cabinet Tuesday evening local time. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is expected to announce the agreement, followed by President Biden making an on-camera message about the ceasefire. That should read figurehead Biden, but then again, I'm quoting the Hill because he's not anything like a president. If this is true, praise God. If this is true, one of the most dangerous times in any war is ahead of a ceasefire. This from Newsweek. Israel strikes Beirut ahead of vote on ceasefire. Potential Israel-Hezbollah ceasefire deals emerge. Here's what to expect. That from ABC News. So it seems to be sort of a consensus that a ceasefire in Lebanon to be announced at 10 p.m. takes effect at 10 a.m., so about 13 hours from now. This is not, of course, between Hamas and Israel. This is between Hezbollah, located in Lebanon, and Israel. It also comes ahead of the time where President Trump will take office again. He is not a predictable man related to foreign policy. The United States has been very predictable. The people at the State Department can be counted on to make America last. Not last, as in last a long time, but to put America's interests last. That's been a reliable tactic of the people who run what's called Foggy Bottom for years. President Trump is far less predictable. If you're playing poker, you want to play against a predictable opponent, not someone who's unpredictable. It's become super easy to predict that government schools will, in large part, stand against parental rights. But how much money's been spent on this? From Harbinger's Daily, piece by Alex Newman, this is a fascinating number. Government school districts across America spent a staggering $3.2 billion of taxpayer money last year fighting against parents and school board members concerned about the indoctrination and sexualization of children, according to a new study that examined costs nationwide. Critics blasted educational officials over the news. The study headlined "The Cost of Conflict, the Fiscal Impact of Culturally Divisive Conflict on Public Schools in the United States," examined the financial impact of what leftist researchers described as heightened conflict over culturally divisive topics. The subjects included race mongering as well as homosexual and so-called transgender propaganda. Led by left-wing researchers at the University of California and other academic institutions, the final report suggested it was concerned parents who were to blame. Government, quote, educators peddling racial hysteria and sexual deviancy were portrayed as innocent victims merely facing an onslaught of attack from unhinged parents. So if this truly came from a left-wing source saying, well, look at all the money you're forcing us to spend, that's very, very much like an abuser saying, baby, you made me hit you. Baby, I told you, don't wear that dress. It's very much like a abuser saying, but I told you, don't you speak back. I told you, you get hand when you speak back, baby. Don't make me hit you. And incidentally, if you think that dynamic doesn't exist, talk to cops who visit domestic violence situations or social workers who deal with the aftermath. Or talk to my sister, who's a rape counselor. That exists all the time. She made me because I done warned her. It is abusive, what the schools are doing. There is a simple, simple game you can use to figure out if this is abuse. Okay, here's the game. Remove the magic words. So let's remove the magic word. The magic word is public school. Magic phrase, public school. Let's replace this with random adult. Or let's replace it with neighbor. Okay? Government school with neighbor. So your neighbor's house, right next door, have that take the place of government school or public school. They're not public, clearly. They're against the public in so many cases. So it's a government school. Replace it mentally with neighbor's house. Replace teacher or educator with neighbor. Okay? Got that mentally? So let's go back through the news.
parents have been discovering that when they send their kids to their neighbor's house, their neighbors are showing their children pornography and telling their children to look at it with them, to talk about it, but do not tell mom and dad. This is just between you and I. This is our little secret. How is it different? Well, they're educators. How is it different? You can slap a name on anything. Someone who's an educator can be deceived. They can be spiritually captured into believing they're doing the right thing. They're freeing the kids. Can I tell you something? If you've ever talked with someone who's an expert in pedophilia, like I have, and interviewed someone who's an expert in this, you know what pedophiles believe and tend to convince themselves of? They're freeing the kids. They convince themselves of this. I mean, look, these, they may be 11 or 12, but they know who they are. They're being oppressed by their parents. I see them for what they are. I see them as sentient beings who deserve this freedom. I am, in fact, freeing them. I'm teaching them things important for them to know, and they believe it. And there are teachers who have been caused to believe this, and $3.2 billion has been spent to make schools a safe place for pedophiles. There's something called prepping an environment. When you are in the business of hiring high-tech workers, you prep your environment. You have a workplace that looks a certain way. The workstations look a certain way. Your cafeteria works a certain way. For instance, I once thought about going to work at Google, and I got an opportunity to go down and do an informational interview, series of interviews. I just met some people on a panel back when I was in high tech. And I guess, I don't know if I'm glad I didn't do that or not. It would have been an amazing experience. I was working at Microsoft at the time, so I had to be very careful about going down there. You know where the tour started? In the Googleplex? Lunch. It's the same thing we used to do when we were trying to recruit someone at Microsoft. We'd have breakfast at our best cafeteria. And let the people go choose what they want to eat. Oh, yeah, though this is all at discount rates. It's on us today. There's a gym, et cetera. But we were also watching them, incidentally. Did they get the algorithm? How did they go get their breakfast? Were they efficient at it? And then we were putting stuff away. Did they use the recycling? Did they get that algorithm? It's always, they're testing us. But you're prepping this environment. It's a fun place. Look how people are dressed. Look at the workstations. Hey, here's some common work areas. Yes, of course we have offices. In the schools, if you were to want to have pedophiles work there, what would you do differently? What is the job description that's the dream of a pedophile? Come to a building stocked with children, look at pornography with them without the permission of parents, and we'll protect you and pay you to do it. And if you're a man who's sexually aroused by pretending to be a woman, all the better. Now you're really diverse. It's prepping an environment. How many school bosses know this? I don't know. I think so many of them are spiritually captured because they serve organizations. And when people serve organizations like school unions, etc., it becomes very, very difficult to see how utterly corrupt the organization is. Sometimes it's very, very little things, super little things. We went out to dinner once in Chicago when I was working at Microsoft, and it was an important meeting. It was probably a $100 million meeting. So it had a lot of revenue importance. But we went out to dinner that night, and my boss was with me, and he was the senior person there. There were probably 20 people at dinner, and I'm thinking our dinner bill was somewhere around $7,000 or $8,000. Absurd. And I remember the bill came around and my boss handed it to me. Now that's totally against protocol. As a senior person, he is to pay. I knew this, but he said, no, you don't get it. You buy, I approve. Okay. Now, I don't have any doubt that the dinner would have been approved. But then again, I don't know the inner workings with my boss and his boss. I don't know how many dinners like this there have been. I don't know what's on his corporate credit card. I know he's my boss. It's $7,000 or $8,000. It's a rounding error with a $100 million deal. So I convinced myself it was okay. What was I going to say? I refuse. I guess I should have. It's against the rules. Small thing, right? In the schools, it's not a small thing. They're prepping the environment across the board. Here's an example. There is a school district that decided to ban parents who wore XX wristbands at the daughter's game with a boy pretending to be a girl. Roughly 2 months after barring parents who wore XX, but you get that right. It's the chromosomes. Roughly 2 months after barring parents who wore XX wristbands during a high school soccer game against a so-called transgender athlete, a school district is confident in its decision to do so. Anthony Foot Bow, New Hampshire, told the New Hampshire Journal he had received a notice of trespass from Bow and Dunbarton School District Superintendent Marcy Keller after he'd worn armbands in support of biological girls-only sports to his daughter's high school soccer game back in September. Foot, his wife Nicole, Kyle Fellers, Eldon Rash, then filed a lawsuit against the Bow School District, Superintendent of Schools Marcy Kelly, Principal Matt Fisk, Athletic Director Mike Delsitz, and Bow Police Lieutenant Phil Lamy, and soccer referee Steve Rossetti several days later. And the silent protests, the lawsuit says, intended to show solidarity with the Bow team and oppose a policy that allowed a boy to play against girls on Plymouth's team. So a school district come back and said, we're good. We're going to continue to do this. You're not allowed to wear XX. Fact of the matter is this. That's a school district at war with truth. There is no such thing as a biological girl because there's no such thing as a non-biological girl. They're fighting against truth. Who is truth? Jesus said, I am the truth, the way, and the life. They're fighting Jesus because they're fighting truth. There is some good news in all of this. A judge says that an ex-coach was within protected speech in opposing a so-called trans athlete's inclusion in girls' competition. John Pakas is trying to get his job back, claiming he was fired for his stance. He's not claiming he was fired for his stance. He was obviously fired for his stance. A former track coach, in a fight to get his job back, saying the school district he was fired from violated his free speech, and a federal judge in the case may agree. John Parks is taking a legal stand after allegedly being fired from Lake Oswego High School for sending a letter to Oregon state officials concerning laws related to so-called transgender athletes. The Oregon School Activities Association says students can compete based on their consistently asserted gender identity. This news that I'm quoting, these past two stories have come from Fox News, which is a corrupt news organization. Utterly corrupt. How can I say that? Because they pretend. They pretend there's such a thing as a transgender person. There is no such phenomena. No one was born in the wrong body. There are people who are intersex, tragic condition, very difficult to think about having because you have the organs of both sexes. How would you decide? What would you do? I don't know. But just as sometimes people are born without a leg, born one-legged, we are still a bipedal species. They're prepping the environment for people who refuse to recognize classifications, who refuse to recognize truth, and refuse to respect boundaries between kids and sexual material. And it's part and parcel of a decay in believability. There is a guy who heads up the Health and Human Services Division, the Department of Government that RFK Jr. is set to take over. If God willing, President Trump actually does take office, God willing. Xavier Becerra, in this soundbite here, is the current Secretary of HHS. Should have been impeached multiple times. Here's one reason why.
Are you familiar that in that report, it revealed that children were pimped out by their aunt, which it turns out the aunt wasn't even related to the child, the so-called aunt. Are you familiar with that story that was in there?
There are a number of incidents that are reported in that Florida report. Some of them I can probably recall better than others. Some of them I would challenge and dispute, but that one I don't remember.
And do you remember the teenage girl that was in a house with unknown men with no private bedroom for her? Are you familiar with the sponsors that utilize a strip club in Jacksonville as an address for where this child, where a child should be settled?
Congressman, as I said, I don't have the information on that Florida grand jury report in front of me. I certainly can go back and take a look at it and try to get back to you.
That was Representative Tom Tiffany asking questions there. By the way, Xavier Becerra, who runs Health and Human Services and who should have been impeached, was also asked, because Representative Tiffany asked him, would you change anything given the fact that 320,000 children have gone missing? Would you change anything? He refused to answer the question. He said, well, we try very hard. Can I suggest something of a Republican Congress that actually wants to be serious people? There is a jail cell beneath Congress, and Congress has the ability to charge people with contempt of Congress. When the answer is, would you do anything differently? Pardon me, the question is, would you do anything differently? And the answer from a public official is, we try very hard. Give him one chance. That's not what I asked. Would you do anything differently? If they still refuse to answer, charge them with contempt and put them in a jail cell. It's what would happen to us if a judge told us to answer and we refused. We'll come back under the Disciples' View. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. You probably saw what went on in Montreal. This is where we're hearing about the ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon, not between Hamas and Israel. Of course, why would Hamas want a ceasefire? Because they have a few more weeks of Joe Biden and the people who run him giving them money to attack Israel, because they've been funding both sides of that war. In Montreal, there were a series of riots and people saying on camera, the final solution is coming for you. Do you know what the final solution is? And of course, any minor student of history knows that the final solution were words uttered by Adolf Hitler and his minions that led to the killing of Jewish people on a massive industrial basis in Nazi Germany. And in addition to that, communists and same-sex attracted people and gypsies, mass murder on an industrial scale. There were people with Hamas flags and the flags of Iran, because Hamas and Iran are satellites of one another. Hamas, the satellite of Iran, Iran, the nation state. They attempted to break into government buildings. They set people's cars ablaze. Meanwhile, the dictator of Canada, a teenage boy named Justin Trudeau, was at a concert by Taylor Swift, handing out friendship bracelets. There was another guy in Canada in a different city in Toronto, same weekend. His name is Ezra Levant. This guy, Ezra, if you're not familiar with his work, has been on the forefront of citizen journalism, independent journalism now for about 20 years. He's a Canadian journalist. He's head of Rebel Media. Ezra Levant was arrested in Toronto, seemingly for being Jewish while practicing journalism.
Well, because it's right up to him to say you have free speech stand up, aren't you?
Well, yeah, because you're inciting this crowd and then it breaches the peace.
That's fine.
Your presence is inciting them, and that's exactly what you're trying to do.
Because I'm a Jew.
No, because you're trying to incite them.
I haven't tried to incite them. I want you to take a picture of the hate crime that
you're abiding. You done it on the other side. You didn't need to walk over.
No, I wanted to go out.
Now I'm going to tell you to move over there.
And I allowed you to take that video. I allowed you to take that video.
So you're refusing to leave?
I'm refusing to leave.
Why?
Because I'm a Jew, I'm a citizen, and I'm your boss. And I don't leave because you say Jews aren't allowed on the street.
Well, you know what? In the interest of keeping peace here and public safety, you're under arrest for breach of the peace. Take a minute.
Good!
And he was arrested. There is a whole series of arrests going on in Canada and the UK for speech. Tommy Robinson is in a prison cell in the UK for publishing a documentary about the sexual trafficking of girls, grooming and trafficking of girls by Middle Eastern men in the UK. Ezra Levant was arrested for inciting. What was he doing? Well, to be fair, we don't have the video of what he was doing, but knowing Ezra Levant, he was asking questions. You can't go around asking questions. That's violence in and of itself, of course. It's inciting. As frustrating as it is sometimes, on this program we make a habit of thanking the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
And got my lipstick on today, so I'm a little bit more together. I cannot live in a country that voted for Trump. I cannot spend another 4 years under that man.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babbling, almost always three. Number one, disgraced lawyer Mark Elias has apparently helped traffic the fake Russia dossier for Hillary Clinton. He has apparently launched warfare, lawfare against Republicans, and according to media reports, he is behind the very obvious counting of illegal votes by Democrats in Pennsylvania. So, of course, MSNBC had him on call to talk about Trump's AG pick, Pam Bondi. He called an election denier.
Look, she's an election denier, just straight out and out. I mean, Steve Doocy, of all people, was dubious of her claim of fake ballots. I mean, at the point that you've lost Steve Doocy.
Steve Doocy being the butt of the jokes at MSNBC because he asked questions. Mark Elias took a formerly august and well-thought-of law firm, Perkins Coie, and in my judgment, absolutely decimated it. When I worked in tech, Perkins Coie was my lawyer. They were our litigators. They were our lawyers overall. I wouldn't walk into a Perkins Coie office these days to save my life because my life would be at risk in my judgment. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Fake conservative David Brooks somehow believes the DOJ and FBI are politically neutral.
Their mission is to disrupt the institutions. Now, I happen to think a lot of our institutions need some disrupting. We've got a lot of, why can't we why can't we build subways in this country? Why can't we build fighter planes in this country? A lot of these institutions have gone creaky, and so they need reform, but they don't need a blowtorch. And especially in the Attorney General's office, what we're talking about is not reform of the Justice Department. That's not cleaning out the bureaucracy. That's taking a blowtorch to the neutral institutions of justice.
The DOJ is a neutral institution. Merrick Garland refused to comply with a congressional subpoena. He is the so-called attorney general. Merrick Garland put Steve Bannon in jail for refusing to comply with a congressional subpoena. The difference? Merrick Garland said the congressional subpoena for Bannon was legitimate. It came from an illegitimate body constitutionally, the January 6th committee, but Merrick Garland said it was legitimate. When he was subpoenaed by the Congress, the actual Congress, not a clown committee, an actual committee, he said that's not a legitimate subpoena. So he's not going to comply. That is the same Merrick Garland, of course, who has put 77-year-old women in jail cells for taking selfies inside the Capitol after they walked in through open doors and harmed nothing and no one. That's the same DOJ that blocks the imprisonment of illegal immigrants for committing crimes like rape. Yes, it's very politically neutral. Fake conservative David Brooks. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Xavier Becerra, the current secretary of HHS, didn't seem particularly bothered that illegal immigrant children are being housed in strip clubs.
Are you familiar with the sponsors that utilize a strip club in Jacksonville as an address for where a child should be settled?
Congressman, as I said, I don't have the information on that Florida grand jury report in front of me. I certainly can go back and take a look at it.
Doesn't seem that bothered. It seems to me that if I was running an organization like that, and I had heard a rumor of a child being trafficked into a sex club, I might look into that. Would you? We played a game earlier where we replaced magic words. One of the magic words is Department of Health and Human Services. Why? It's a government department that's very serious. And he's the secretary. He's Xavier Becerra. Let's play a game. Let's say that you are on a church mental health committee. And someone comes in and says, you guys, I was just reading an email from one of our partners, mental health provider, who says that there's a kid attending our church who's being forced to live in a sex club. What should we do? Well, I don't know. Call the police? Look into it right now? Not in the world of Xavier Becerra. It's just a report. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time, and I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, I shared with you during the first segment a Thanksgiving story. It's called God is in the Dryer. Real thing that happened to my mom. She, a single parent with a single parent's income, through some very bad decisions my dad made, she had the dryer break. It was around Thanksgiving time. She was preparing for Christmas, and she had tried to get it running. My uncle came and tried to fix it. He was a good handyman. He couldn't fix it. She'd done the math, realizing that I have to call a repairman. I can't have my kids have dirty clothes. Got to be able to dry the clothes. So she did the math and realized she'd need to take back some Christmas gifts. And she paid her repairman to come. The professional repairman took the dryer apart, looked at it, and couldn't find anything wrong. He told my mom, this dryer should work, I'm sorry. And then he wouldn't take her money. God bless him. But that meant that she had to buy a new dryer. So all the Christmas gifts would have to go back. So we would only get Christmas gifts from our divorced father because his new wife had access to money. And then my mom cried. She groaned. She made a groaning noise. The Psalms talk about this. Sometimes the words aren't enough, and so you groan to the Lord. And she said, I can't handle it. And these tears, God, I can't handle this. I need help. I need you to help me. For whatever reason, my mom tried the dryer one more time, and it suddenly worked. I think God was saying, turn to me. Many years later, in Salt Lake City, Utah, I was about 28 years old, and we were doing our first startup. And I was kind of elected, I guess, the boss, or maybe I seized that position. And we were working on a strategy that's, I think God inspired me with this strategy to build this internet radio network. And our friends and I were working for free. Anytime money came in, I paid other people and was holding back on paying myself. And my girlfriends at the time, who's now my wife, I was embarrassed. Sometimes she'd have to loan me money. I made a deal with the independent gas station next door. You could kind of call it a convenience store, except it wasn't. They just had this chicken machine and some candy. And I made a deal with this guy. I said, how long do you hold on to that chicken? Oh, not very long. I said, oh, be honest. Oh, maybe 2 days. Would you give it to me after 3 days? Yeah, I'll give you the three-day chicken for a discount. Three-day-old chicken. So I was buying three-day-old gas station chicken sometimes to eat and always making sure other people got paid first. I did a speech. We worked in this building, and a guy ran this building. His name was Alan, and Alan was interesting guy at investments all over the place and had a bunch of salespeople working for him. And he happened to come downstairs one day, and he was waiting to meet with me, and he had given us rent for equity. And he just stuck his head in the door, and he saw me giving a speech to the team. And he pulled me aside and said, hey, like, you've got a background in this. I said, yeah, I did sales for a long time and sales training. And hey, would you consider coming and doing a speech to my team? Just basically the same one you just gave. help my team just feel good about what they do. And he said, I'll pay you. You'll pay me? Yeah, I'll give the speech. I remember the exact amount of money. He said, I'll pay you $1,500. Wow, that was a lot of money. So I agreed. I went and gave the speech for Alan. And he, true to his word, gave me $1,500 in cash. I didn't ask why it was cash. It was Alan, and I was glad to take the cash. Maybe it was a favor to me. I went downstairs to where our company was housed, went to my office to answer emails, and a female employee walked in. Her name was Simone. She had brown hair, brown eyes. She was about 26 years old. I knew her from radio. She had the most beautiful, professional radio voice I've ever heard in a female personality. Simone sat down to tell me that she was getting kicked out of her apartment because she couldn't pay rent. I said, how far are you behind? She said, $1,500. Knowing that I had to go home and confess to my girlfriend who'd been paying all the bills, who's now my wife, who knew I was going to have $1,500, I gave it to Simone because God is in the dryer. Insanely, when I went home, knowing I'd have to make this confession, I got an email from a guy who wanted to buy some domain names I had bought, web domains. I got on the phone with him, and I'd bought the domain names netpoll.com, netpoll.net. It was about doing polling online. I bought a whole series of those domain names. We had a brief phone conversation. He said, are you going to do anything with these? I said, yeah, one day, but not right now. He said, I'll buy them for you. I said, okay, make an offer. $5,000. I pretended to want to negotiate. We landed on $5,000. And that day, God was in the dryer, or rather the phone. I remember that lesson of my mom in Thanksgiving, and I was thankful. In the beginning, God was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations until God gives us permission to speak again together. May the peace of the Lord that surpasses all understanding rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Adam this week and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.